Jane Austen. She's a perennial favorite of homeschool students and their parents because of great stories, wit, and wisdom. Today's lovely guest is author Haley Stewart to share a wonderful resource she has created, Jane Austen's Genius Guide to Life.
Welcome to Homeschooling Saints, the podcast that helps you create the homeschool you love for the people you love. Our host is Lisa Maladnik, a Catholic life coach, TV host, best-selling author, and an instructor at Homeschool Connections.
Before we get started, remember to subscribe to this podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're watching on YouTube, click the bell to join our channel. Hello and welcome. I'm Lisa Maladnik, your host, and today's guest is Haley Stewart, here to talk about her own book. It's just beautiful, Jane Austen's Genius Guide to Life. Haley Stewart is the editor of Word on Fire's children's imprint, and she's the author of The Grace of Enough, Jane Austen's Genius Guide to Life, and the Sister Serafina Mysteries. We've talked about all of these on the show, so I've got some links in the show notes. Haley's married to her high school sweetheart, Daniel, and they have four children. Haley, it's great to see you again.
Great to see you too. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no, it's always really fun, and it's great to see you. And I'm particularly intrigued by this because I've just been reading Pride and Prejudice for the first time. Like, I've read other Jane Austens, and I'm not all the way through it yet, but I'm crazy about the Keira Knightley version of Pride and Prejudice. That's like my favorite on-screen version. But just so funny to have forgotten for some years now how much I love it. And then to be enjoying it again, just her signature wit. She's so funny.
She is. And I think that's the number one thing that sometimes modern readers miss at first, because the language is going to be a little more antiquated. You're kind of getting your bearings. And if you don't know, like, she is intentionally being funny here, you can laugh, you know, then you're kind of missing the whole experience. And so I think that that is key to note that she's very, very funny. And that's a huge piece of the enjoyment of her books.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes during times of greatest sort of social restriction, in a sense, humor has a way of bubbling up in a kind of a subversive way. And I feel that in her. I feel her making little observations as if innocently that are side-splittingly funny about some hypocritical person or somebody who's just speaking out of total ignorance but trying to impress someone. Or it's just hilariously funny. So having made that point, I'd love to know from you, Haley, just where did it start for you? Where did you get excited about Jane Austen? And then how did it lead to you mining it for all this richness and sharing it with others?
Sure. So in my home growing up, we watched a lot of the film adaptations and fell in love with those. And then probably maybe early middle school, I started reading all the novels. And then I was reintroduced to them in college. I actually did a little reading course with one of our philosophy professors in college. We read all the novels and looked at them through a moral philosophy lens. Ooh. Which was so fun. I think that really got me going and kind of seeing more to them beyond what is wonderful, you know, her wit and her wonderful plots and her great characters. There's so much going for Jane Austen's novels, but also seeing kind of a deeper level of commentary about how to live a good life, how to become a virtuous person, how do our relationships help us or hinder us from that goal? And all of those things are just woven through all of her books.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you went really deep. Well, that's exciting to me. Is it okay to say the name of the school where you took this awesome course?
Sure. Yeah. This was Baylor University in Waco, Texas.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. It's so nice to hear that that course is out there somewhere. Just note to self, moms. But yeah, so then having really steeped yourself in a philosophical perspective about it, as well as just the deep love that you already had for her, take us into what it was like for you just making that decision and putting it together as a resource.
Yeah, I had been kind of, the idea had been simmering for years. The book came out like 6 years after I had the idea and had started writing here and there. But I really wanted to make her kind of vision for the good life something that was accessible and just explore that in all of her novels. Because I think often she's presented as like the ultimate romance writer, you know, which her romances are great. She's fantastic at that. But there's also so much more going on. And so I kind of wanted to dive into that and imagine if Jane Austen was going to be our life coach, or she was going to kind of guide us through life, what would that look like? What would she say? And I think that's because I see so much of my moral formation and my understanding of relationships between men and women, relationships between parents and children, friendships, all of these things. Her views had a huge influence on my formation in that way. And so I just wanted to dive into all of that because I felt so indebted to Jane Austen.
Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see that as you're talking, scenes are flashing before my eyes. You know, friendships within the family, loyalties, rebellion, people going through times of intense suffering and alienation, choosing to do the right thing. I'm thinking of Sense and Sensibility, and in the end, you know, having things come right, you know, and maybe in reality, it doesn't come right till heaven. But sometimes when we're patient and we are selfless and we do the right thing, God does present us with remarkable graces. And so I love there's so much of our walk with God and with each other that is in these stories. So I'd love to have you just break open the contents of the book for us. What kinds of topics do you cover in the chapters?
Sure. So what I do is go through each of the finished novels and we follow one character's kind of trajectory from vice to virtue. So not that all of these characters are malicious or vicious. These are all good characters, but who have flaws, just like we all do. And so kind of following their journey and seeing what was the antidote to that flaw, that vice, and how did that virtue then emerge? What does that look like? And so that's what each chapter is kind of following. And I think what makes Jane Austen so relatable, even though we're 200 years after she was writing, you know, very different social norms, very different conventions, very different world. I think what makes her so relatable is she isn't presenting how are we virtuous when we're on the battlefield, or how are we virtuous in, you know, the throne room of the king. She's really looking at how are we virtuous when you're at a picnic and somebody is really annoying you. Like, can you be nice to them? Can you be kind? Like, or are you going to be so self-centered that you're going to hurt someone's feelings who wasn't trying to bother you? You know, those kinds of situations where we're all going to be in an environment where we have to decide, am I going to go talk to the person who doesn't have any friends in the room? Or am I going to go talk to the people I already know? You know, this is going to come up all the time. And so I think that's what's so interesting about her novels is she puts you in these seemingly small decisions, these seemingly small environments. And then you realize, well, that's what life is really like. That's all of those little decisions that make up our character. And so I think about my brother and I were watching Emma. This was years ago. So we were teenagers. So this was the Gwyneth Paltrow and Jeremy Northam Emma. And this isn't exactly dialogue from the book, but it's very true to the character, the kind of hero of the story, Mr. Knightley. There's been this older spinster who has been made fun of at a social event. And so he looks over to her. He has a lot of sway, a lot of clout in the community. And he asks her, oh, would you come and pick strawberries with me? You know, he wants to get her out of this situation where she's been mortified. She's not a very pleasant person to be around. She's very irritating. But he sees this is the right thing to do. I have the prudence, the discernment to see how do I act rightly in this situation is asking this older woman to go pick strawberries with me. And I remember watching this movie, my brother, who was a teenager at the time, said, gosh, Mr. Knightley always knows the right thing to do. Like, I want to be that kind of person. And I think that's what she does so well, is kind of show what does it look like to be a virtuous person? And yet it's not preachy. It's not boring. Her characters are very human, very interesting, very fun, but they're really exploring a lot of the depths of what it means to live a good life, to be a virtuous person.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. And there's often a moment or two here and there where there's a certain character like Mr. Knightley or Charlotte in Pride and Prejudice. There's usually somebody who's a little bit of a conscience voice or someone who can speak a word of wisdom at a critical moment, sort of the oracle that steps in. But as you said, it happens so naturally in kind of an everyday, very relational kind of way. But I also love that you referenced your brother feeling inspired by Mr. Knightley. Would you say a little bit about, you know, there's this stereotype that Jane Austen's for girls. Oh my goodness. Say a few words on that.
Jane Austen is for everyone. And if you look at, you know, some of the best male writers, they love Jane Austen. You know, Chesterton loved Jane Austen. C.S. Lewis loves Jane Austen. You know, men have always loved Jane Austen. And what's interesting is her male characters are so great. I mean, she has incredible male characters who you are aspirational. And so I think both her humor, her exploration of vice and virtue, and just the depth of her male characters would draw any male reader. So I think that is really important. And for both young men and young women, the way she presents relationships between men and women, romantic relationships, friendships, is just so wise and so interesting, because she's really helping the reader kind of flag potential problems, you know, see like, oh, this person, everyone loves them, they're so charming, but again and again, they make these little selfish choices. And you start to see over the course of the novel, it feels like a little problem, but it's going to be a big problem. This is something to be aware of. You know, to be wary of when someone is charming, but not necessarily kind. What does that look like? How do we kind of flag that problem? And she has just a lot of marriages that you look at and go, ooh, I don't think I want a marriage like that. For instance, you're reading Pride and Prejudice. You've got Mr. and Mrs. Bennet, and he married her because she was a very beautiful young woman. But then they get married and she doesn't have any substance. And so he doesn't respect her. And because he doesn't respect her, the affection between the two of them just disintegrates. Mm-hmm. And it's a very unhappy marriage. You know, it's funny. Jane Austen makes it very funny. Their conversations are just hysterical. But if that was you, it would be really tragic. It's sad. And mm-hmm. So I think she's good at kind of bringing those different things out and showing that the relationships that are aspirational in these books are when each person is making the other one more virtuous, is kind of inspiring them on. You know, in Pride and Prejudice, you have Elizabeth Bennet and Mr. Darcy, and both of them have major flaws. You know, they're both very prideful. Mm-hmm. They're both quick to make these judgments. And it's because of their really friendship that builds over the course of the book, this relationship between them, which is at first very hostile between them.
Yeah.
But it's because of it that is calling them both to become better people. You know, that's the whole course of the book is by the end, they've both gained some self-knowledge that they didn't have because of these interactions. And I think that's something that is so true that Jane Austen pinpoints is how do we become holy? Usually by the people that God puts in our lives. Mm-hmm. It's by family members, our friends, that these are the relationships that we build our character with, either because they're difficult, so they make us grow because of that, or we're inspired by them and they kind of guide us towards something. But it's our communities, that's the environment that's going to help us become holy.
Oh, that's such a good moment to give everybody a chance to reflect while we go to our sponsor break. We're going to hear from just the wonderful folks at Homeschool Connections who own this show and keep us in business here so that we can have wonderful conversations like this. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Walter Crawford.
And I'm Maureen Whitman.
We are the co-founders of homeschoolconnections.com and proud sponsors of the Homeschooling Saints podcast,
which is here to help you homeschool more joyfully, more easily, and more effectively.
We want to thank you for listening.
And we invite you to check out our courses at homeschoolconnections.com.
And now, back to our program.
All right, we're back with Haley Stewart. We're talking about her book, Jane Austen's Genius Guide to Life, and this is just so rich. You've been touching on so much, almost as if there were a certain amount of spiritual direction, but also relational content, and I know that you talk quite a bit in your writing about virtue, too. Take us into that. What's important about that?
So Austen is such an interesting thinker because she's drawing from the Christian tradition of virtue and also from the Aristotelian tradition. So whether she read Aristotle or not, we don't know, but she's definitely drawing from that tradition that would have been, you know, in the air of the time or in that tradition of thinking about virtue. And so she often is exploring these virtues, showing us the spectrum of what could be. So Aristotle talked a lot about the virtuous mean and then excess and deficiency. So for bravery, courage, that would be the virtuous mean. If you have too much, then you're rash and foolhardy. You know, you're rushing in when you shouldn't. Right. If you have deficiency, then you're cowardly. You're not going in when you should. So the virtuous mean is that bravery, that courage. And I think Austen often is kind of exploring these different virtues by showing us characters that on the whole spectrum, you know,
yes,
show this one is completely off the rails this way. And this character doesn't have enough of this. And then how can the main character, or sometimes the main character is actually a little bit perfect. And so it's a different character that is the one growing, kind of the growth is happening around that main character. So she has it set up in many different ways, but it's often there's this moment of what C.S. Lewis wrote a great essay on Jane Austen's novels, and he calls it this moment of like awakening, where the character is realizing, oh, I didn't realize I was like that, but now I know. You know, something has held the mirror up to my eyes, and now I'm seeing things as they really are. And then that brings the humility in order to grow, in order to change. But unless you know you're flawed, you can't get any better. And so that's often, there's this moment in Pride and Prejudice, it's when Elizabeth Bennet reads Mr. Darcy's letter to her, and she suddenly sees all the events in a slightly different light and realizes, oh, she says, till this moment, I never knew myself. Mm. And she sees her misjudgments, how she misread people. She was flattered, and so she wanted to see people in a certain way. And then that's the beginning of her growth, her journey of growing in humility and compassion. And so I love those moments, because I think for all of us, that moment doesn't come just once. Most of us are hit with our flaws over and over again at different times, but it's this call, it's this opportunity to then grow.
Mm, so beautiful. And they are truly moving moments. I mean, we're so with these characters. We're in their heads and their hearts, and we're kind of being brash and misguided along with them in a sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's certain books where every time I'm like, well, maybe that character, maybe it could work out. You know, maybe, no, he's still just as bad as he was the last time I read it. But you're kind of pulled in, and you're, oh, they're so charming. Or, you know, you're seeing it through the eyes of the character. And yes, she's just masterful at that. She's masterful at creating characters that are so lifelike that you really feel like they're real. Mm. And it's just, it's extraordinary.
Yeah, the intimacy, but without ever having like the author voice intruding, there's just this sense that you go straight to the character. It's just really, I agree that she's a genius. She's right up there. Yeah. So talk to us about how to use the book. So, you know, as a resource and kind of in our families, or how would you like to invite people to take it and run with it?
Yeah, well, I did something fun this past year on my Substack newsletter, which is just an email newsletter. It's a format for that. And I went through each of Austin's novels and then paired it with that chapter in the book. Ooh. So if you've never read Austin, I do give a little summary of each book so you're not lost. You know who the characters are. You can understand what's going on in the chapters we're talking about that novel. But it's also a great opportunity to dive in. And so if you want to encounter Austin's novels, I think this is a really helpful resource. So you can read the novel or even read the chapter to get a feel, get your bearings, and then read the novel so you know what to look out for. And then there's also some discussion questions and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's perfect. But
yeah, what I want is that after you've read this book, you're just very pumped up about Austin. And I've had a couple of interviews, radio interviews and such, where the host said, well, I never read Austin before, but I read your book. So I went to the library and I got Pride and Prejudice and, you know, now I'm a fan. And so that's what I love to hear.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It's like, I'm always saying this because you mentioned life coaching before. I'm a life coach. But one of the things that's so important to me, and I keep thinking of St. Paul as you're talking, there's so many aspects of it that are just kind of resonating for me, but about how each of us kind of has our own little light, right? We're a part of the body of the Christ. Each one's unique. We all contribute something. And here is Jane Austen with all this beautiful, deep, kind of subversive, almost hilarious wisdom, and very, very touching and deep as well. And here you are, taking it and representing some access points for people in the here and now. Guys, girls, men, women, whoever might be curious and be willing to step into this whole other world. And it just feels like it's on that continuum of that light, of evangelizing, but in a totally unique way. That God has given you a kind of a burning sense of the beauty that's inherent in this. And then you respond by then sharing it out. And then other people get ignited. It's just makes me think of the Easter Vigil and passing that light around, you know, lighting each other's candles.
Well, I love that. Thanks, Lisa.
Oh my gosh. It really is touching. Because when you touch on something like you talked about Lewis and Chesterton, these are some of the writers that have that we know do that, right? They light something up in us. They awaken something. And it's like you said, once the character sees something, they can't unsee it, right? They have an awakening. But the writing itself does that too.
Right. I think if we follow Austen's characters on their journey of waking up to their flaws, opportunities to grow in virtue, what that looks like, then it is this opportunity for self-reflection because for me, so Emma is the least likable of Jane Austen's main characters. And unfortunately, she's the one I relate to the most. It's very helpful though, to be reading this and you're going, wow, I can totally see myself doing this or thinking this way or behaving this way. And this is my natural tendency, perhaps. So how can I be aware of that, notice that, redirect that? I think it through literature, we're often kind of lulled into a space we think is safe when then we're kind of hit over the head by, oh no, oh, that's me too. It's not just Emma, it's Haley as well. And now I'm going to need to go on this journey. And so I think a lot of Austen's novels really calls us forward on that journey of growing in holiness.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, it is just stellar content and very trustworthy for all your parents out there. If you don't already know, Jane Austen is a very trustworthy place to send the minds of your children. What would give us an age range and tell us a little about the kinds of questions and conversations that this resource ignites?
Sure. So I wrote this with grownups in mind, but it is appropriate for younger readers. So I think high schoolers, it would be very accessible to high schoolers. There is one of the novels that has a pregnancy out of wedlock that is referenced. So, but that would be the only thing I think I'd need to flag for parents that's mentioned in the book. And so with the plot summary, kind of sets the reader up to understand what's going on. Then we kind of explore the virtue. In each chapter, I share stories from my own life of learning these things along with these novels or examples from my own life. And then there's some discussion questions in the back of the book. So I think if you were teaching any of Austin's novels, having the chapter that corresponds to that one and kind of reading through it with this view in mind, I think would be a really great tool for discussion. Because I know that my own children, they love to talk about, why is a character good or bad? Was it right that they made that decision? Mm-hmm. They're so interested in that. And I think that Austin's novels give such a great opportunity to explore that and see the complications and the nuance and, okay, well, they didn't do the right thing, but maybe this was why. What could they have done instead? Or, they're mostly a good character, but boy, this flaw is really interfering with the way they're able to love their family or their community. It's hurting people. What does that look like when our sins are affecting the people we care about? And so I think there's just so many opportunities for great discussion and students, defending or critiquing these different characters that are so fascinating that she presents.
Mm, yeah. And thank you for the way you've got it set up too, because homeschoolers are often looking for social opportunities. And when you have the questions built right in and a little bit of personal witness and a summary of the story, if everybody's reading and, not everyone keeps up necessarily, but it's built in a way that everybody can be included wherever they are. And we also have different kinds of learners that read at different rates and all of that. It just sounds like it's a very welcoming format that could be used in a lot of different ways. It could be used for adults or the teens. It could be used in a virtual environment like this one, or it could be used face-to-face in a co-op situation, or just a few friends around the dining room table. Love that. I love it because it invites a kind of intimacy and naturalness that is also part of the writing itself.
And just one little practical tip for if you're just diving into Austin, I think it's very helpful to listen to an audiobook if you're just getting in the first time, because and the reader I will recommend is Juliet Stevenson. She reads all of the novels. She's fantastic. She's an actress and she's been in some of the Jane Austen adaptations, but her versions of the audiobook, she's just great at highlighting the humor that's there, so that as a new reader, if you're new to Austen, you're able to just enjoy it as much as possible, notice that humor and not miss it. So I think if you're feeling overwhelmed or the language is feeling a little bit antiquated to your student, then the audiobook is a great way to go.
That's a great tip. I like that a lot. Also, because when you start to know where the furniture is in the room, you don't feel like you're stumbling over it all over the place. You're getting the cadences, the rhythm, even the characterizations of the person reading the story, so that you can start to get a feel for the time even inside the language. And then, well, that's it. That's a great way to kind of roll out the red carpet. So what else do we need to say about this book, about Jane Austen? Take us out with anything that I know it's a huge subject, but what else is on your heart to leave with our listeners?
I think just that it's so important to offer our children good stories. That doesn't mean stories free of any discussion of vice or difficulty, because that's the world that we have to prepare them for, but to offer them a framework to understand their place in the world. And if they can see themselves relate to these characters that have flaws and yet are still loved and have the opportunity to grow and see that happen, I think there's just so much hopefulness in that kind of story. And I think that's the sort of of story that really prepares our children well to navigate the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. Amen. And I think it takes a little bravery too, just to make a choice. Like we have to make so many choices, as you said, in these stories. And even just that, those little acts of courage of stepping out and trying something new with our kids. We know we get challenged like that in homeschooling all the time. Haley, it's been wonderful as always. Folks, you can find her Substack at haleystewart.substack.com. And that's in the show notes, as well as her Instagram, which is at Haley, H-A-L-E-Y, carrots. Yes, just like the vegetable. And on Twitter, or X as they're calling it now, at Haley Carrots as well. And I'll have her book ordering links, as well as a couple of other episodes that we've done in the last year or two with Haley. Always a joy. Thank you so much, Haley, for being with us again.
Thank you, Lisa. It was so fun to talk about.
Oh, yeah, it is super fun. Everybody, thanks for listening. May God bless you wherever you are in your homeschooling journey, whether you're thinking about it or you're right in the middle of it all. We really appreciate your tuning in. Please pray for us. We're praying for you too. God bless you. Bye-bye. And that's our show for today. Our program is sponsored by homeschoolconnections.com. Be sure to subscribe to Homeschooling Saints and leave us an honest review. God bless you, and thank you for joining us.